Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Horse Geeks podcast, where we look at horses and riding from the inside out. I'm Kirsten Nelson, professional horse trainer, and back with me is my good friend, really co-host, Deborah Merrow, certified Alexander Technique instructor. So today's topic is lunging. If we've talked about this, it was a while ago. I can't remember
Can't
if we did a
remember. Thank
podcast on this
goodness,
or
so
not.
long.
So I go lunging. I'm currently rewriting or updating the second workbook in. So I have a series of four workbooks that maps out all the exercises and some of the basic theory regarding what I teach. And it starts with basic handling, and then groundwork is a second one, and then rider balance is the third one, and then finally horse balance under saddle. And the groundwork workbook and the basic handling workbook had been out since 2009, but they were in. I finished the last two last year, and I really needed to update the formatting and the language and add some stuff to the first two workbooks. So all of them are available, other than I'm currently doing the rewrite of the groundwork workbook. So I'm working on lunging, and I go, why don't we talk about lunging? Because that's fresh on my mind today. I've been rewriting the lesson on lunging. And so, what's like way back when you were probably riding competitively as a jump rider, what was your idea of lunging? Did
Wear them
you
out.
use lunging?
Oh, heck yeah.
Heck yeah. So, what
Especially with
was
my off the track thoroughbreds.
So how did
Just
you use
keep them going till they wear out so I could ride so I didn't get killed.
And so did you just stand there, or did you chase the horse around to make the horse get tired faster?
Both. It just
Both.
depended upon the horse. Yeah. And of course, I had back at that time, I had no thought about how my energy was influencing what the horse was doing, thinking at that time. I was nervous, Nelly. I certainly probably was not helping my horses at that point.
No, and both of us come from, like we used to say, the same litter of Jack Russells, right? It's like both of us, it makes me laugh when people think I'm patient and calm because I go,
They don't see us in the car when we're driving together.
No, I have learned across the board, it only hurts me to get impatient and to get anxious or worked up. So I have learned to be patient and calm, but I go, that was hard work for me to get there. It
This has
wasn't
been a
my
long road
natural.
for me for the patience and calm, too.
Yeah, it was not a natural way of being to me at all. And
I don't think that's a natural. I would
I think for
think
some
that
people,
most
it's
riders are type A and they have, or show people, they ex have expectations of time when things are supposed to happen.
I would say
Yeah.
competitive riders, yes.
Competitive riders, yes.
Not all horse owners, not all riders.
Right.
But yeah, that sort of go, go, type A energy. Yes, we had that in common
Yeah,
as
we
two
do.
little Jack Russells nipping at the heels of our horses. And when I owned my first horse when I was 16, I knew nothing about any work on the ground. I didn't know what lunging was. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know anything other than lead the horse with a lead rope and get on and ride. Those were my options. Or
Yeah,
get off and lead my horse by the reins if things got really bad.
right.
That was
Yeah,
it.
I actually started as a Western rider when I was. No, I started as an English rider in Boston with a German riding instructor that brought me to tears every week. But when we moved out west, I started riding Western and riding cutting horses. So it was a totally different discipline thought process. Yeah, I don't remember lunging horses when I was riding Western. It was more when I got into the hunter jumper stuff that that was
You're
one of the
lunging them
things
to get them tired enough to
to
be
get them
calm.
tired. Yeah,
And
that whole theory.
The two main reasons I see people lunging horses would be to get a horse tired enough to be calm, kind of wear them out, make them physically tired, or to really push the horse, hoping that they learn how to go forward, to just
Oh,
drive
that's
and
true.
drive and drive the horse that doesn't want to move forward and make them go forward until they get it. Neither one of those strategies I find ever works, and certainly doesn't work for the long term. So the horse we're trying to wear out tends to get fitter and fitter and has to be
Yeah,
lunged
no
longer and longer. And the effect of
kidding.
calmness from exhaustion lasts for fewer and fewer minutes. It's
I
like we're
totally agree.
basically
I think I was up to at least an hour to an hour and a half of lunging my off the track thoroughbred before I could go at a horse show, before I could get on and go in a class
Yeah, it just takes
without getting
longer.
bucked off or run away with.
Yeah. And then the horses that tend to have lethargic movement or they don't want to go forward, I think most people think if we could only motivate them enough, they'll figure it out. And what I see happen in that instance is the horse just happily says, okay, you do all the effort. I'll put in less and less effort. You put in more and more effort. And as soon as you quit driving me, I'm just going to stop.
Stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so neither kind of idea really works.
I guess
And
what I know now, which I wish I had known then, is that this tool can be used as a learning experience. I mean, where it, instead of it just being a mindless exercise, you could really do a lot of interesting work on the ground with a long line.
bingo.
Yeah, and
Bingo.
that's the
It's
big
a
change.
it can be a teaching tool.
Yeah. Huge
And
change for me when I met you and we've started playing with all that 15 some years ago. I was like, wow, yeah, I've missed a lot with a lot of horses not knowing that.
yeah, because when we look at there's so many layers to the exercise that we call lunging. I go, lunging is almost a generic term that means the human stands still in the middle and the horse circles around. That's the essence of the lunging exercise.
Right.
But within that, there is a million different ways to go about what we all call lunging, right? So just the layers that I even had to in this groundwork workbook, because I have two stages to the training I do. The first stage is the first most important thing is the horse has to feel safe. So if the horse isn't in the learning frame of mind, we have a safety issue, meaning the horse might be unsafe to handle or ride because the horse doesn't feel safe internally. The second layer is just basic balance, which is a coordination of the spinal functions. It's a specific thing, but I have to describe that. And if we just take lunging, the first layer of lunging to me is to help the horse overcome fear, overcome resistance, overcome defensiveness, and just learn to have a calm, self-controlled, self-propelled walk, trot, and canter. I go, that's it. I just want them not to be afraid of the fast speeds, or constantly throwing a halt into the slow speeds, making me work harder than the horse. So I go, what I'm looking for that tells me the horse doesn't have fear anymore about any particular gait or any aid I'm giving in the process is when I can do nothing in the middle and the horse just walks to start with, just walks. So the fast ones have to calm down in order to walk, and the slow ones have to find first gear in order to maintain the walk. And I go, if we just start with the objective of walking, which we're going to have to correct halting or going faster than the walk, we're going to have to correct the horse trying to come into the circle and stop, or stop out on the circle, or try to change directions. There's like a boatload of lessons just in getting our horse to maintain a self-propelled, self-controlled walk for like 5 minutes, 5 consecutive minutes, maybe
Oh
10
boy.
consecutive minutes, right? To the left and then also to the right. And I go, when we have a horse like you're describing, you have a wound up horse that you're trying to tire out. But ironically, when we push with the whip and we ask for upward transitions, what happens energetically, because we're thinking the more we push, the more we make the horse tired. But actually, every time a horse makes an upward transition, you're going to increase the energy level.
Right.
Every time the horse chooses a downward transition or spends time only walking, you're reducing the energy level. So if I want to calm a horse down, I'm going to walk them on the lunge line, not allow them to break into trot or canter. And some horses, if I break a sweat over their tail at the walk, they're a different horse. They learn self-control, right?
Right.
And the walk takes longer to spend any defensive energy or fear energy, but it's like you have this shaken up soda bottle, and the walk is like taking that lid off slowly,
Oh, okay.
releasing that pressure little by little, so you don't just pop the lid off and your soda goes squirting everywhere, right? That's what asking for speed with an anxious horse or a fast horse is, just sort of pulling the lid off of all that shaken up energy. It's just going to
Right.
explode, right? And then we think, well, they'll get tired. And I go, a fearful horse, a horse running on adrenaline, is only going to keep producing more adrenaline. And that's why you have to lunge longer and longer and longer, because they're not organizing through balance and self-control. They're literally running in fear. So you're pumping all these stress hormones that are just giving the body more and more power. When you ask them to slow down from trot or canter to the walk, or maybe walk on a small circle, the longer they walk, the calmer they get. And when a fast horse starts to choose halt, then I know they're really feeling safe and calm. And it's completely backwards from human instinct.
It is. It's
It's
because
backwards.
I've seen people do this. They won't allow the horse to come back down.
Right.
Keep
Right. Because
running.
keep running, because I'm going to make you so exhausted that
Right.
you basically, we're trying to get the horses to acquiesce out of pure exhaustion.
Right.
And I always take, like, I'll tell people, if somebody did that to you, how would you feel about that person? You would just look for less interaction with that person,
Right.
right? Especially if they were getting you to go faster, faster, faster out of fear. You don't want anything to do with that person in the future. So
And I never thought of it, but I'm thinking about it now, is what posture is the horse presenting during all
upside
this?
down,
Head high,
back down,
back dropped,
pelvis
and we're driving
disengaged.
that forward, which just leaves them in that cycle.
Not only leaves them in that cycle, it habituates it and causes muscle development that supports that posture.
Right.
So it makes it harder and harder and harder for the horse to lift their back.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's completely counterproductive to the horse that we want to beautifully bascule over the jumps or have this suspension in canter or trot. I go, it's totally counterproductive, because all we're doing is telling our horse, yeah, use that posture, use that posture, use that posture.
Right.
Right? And it's also going to lead to colic and ulcers, potential lameness issues, because a horse will take a misstep when they're not thinking about how they're moving, or all of that adrenaline and stress hormones, especially if we're contributing it to it. by pushing with the whip and driving the horse. All of those stress hormones and the dominance of the sympathetic nervous system are having a health effect on our horse. We might not notice it that day unless they injure themselves, but then we act surprised because our horse has ulcers or digestive issues or stress issues when we're not working them. I go, but that's what we're telling them to do. Be stressed out. Be more stressed out. Be more stressed
Be
out
like me.
until you hurry up and relax. Yeah.
My list. Don't you see I have a list of things I need to get done?
Exactly. Chop, chop.
They don't think that way.
Yeah. And then on the opposite end of the scale, the horses that are lethargic, that we call lazy, that don't want to go forward, that sort of resist going forward as soon as we relax the lunge whip. It's like those horses, usually it's not a fear issue. They usually tend to feel a little more safe, but it's a comfort issue. It's usually a comfort issue. So it's like horses were designed for motion mechanically. Their inherent design allows them in the wild to move an average of, what is it, 25 miles a day in search of food and water. Right? They play, they fight, or they mate for a very small portion of that time. Most of that time is spent calmly walking as a group, looking for food and water. And so when we provide food and water, even if we give our horse 50 herd members in a pasture that's 2,000 acres, they still know where the water is and when the food's coming. And so we take away that need for consistent movement, right? So part of lunging to me can be replacing that natural sort of what nature intended was long periods of relaxed motion for them to learn to use their bodies, right? And it's
But
kind of
you'd have to
like,
be efficient. I mean, you'd have to be efficient if you're covering that much acreage or miles. You've
exactly.
got to learn how to use your body efficiently,
Yes, at the very least.
or you're
And
not going to make it.
you're not going to make it. And so, even in people, I go, the Maasai warriors are the same physical structure as the Wall Street trader. I go, same human body. But one of them sitting at a desk using the mind all the time doesn't have to use the body efficiently. I can
Right.
walk from here to the barn inefficiently and it doesn't hurt. Right? But if I'm going to walk 20 miles, I'm going to start feeling every little inefficiency
Right.
of my habit and hopefully change it in order to gain comfort. Right. So long distance runners, people who take long walks, start to look efficient in motion because that's also the most comfortable way to move. So I work with that idea with horses that don't want to go forward. And another law of physics, the law of inertia, which we've talked about, is the same reason that we get better mileage in our car on the highway than we do the city. So all of these, when the horse's brain thinks halt is my only place of comfort, then when we push with the whip, they move, but the brain is still wanting halt, right? So if we allow the halt and then we push them back into the walk, what we're doing is causing them to burn more calories by halting, walking, halting, walking. And two things happen in that process that one, they slowly learn with every little bit of walk that we get, they're starting to look for comfort, which is going to lead them to more efficient use of their body or better balance. And eventually, they feel the extra energy that it's taking to stop, walk, stop, walk, stop, walk. And they choose to go out on the highway and just maintain the walk. They go, that's actually more energy efficient to maintain the walk than it is to halt, walk, halt, halt, walk. And they feel that in their body, right? So if I take a horse that doesn't want to move forward and I go, we're going to lunge for an hour, you can make as many halt transitions as you want. That's only going to cost you more energy. But I get to ask you to walk again as many times as I can in an hour. And it always works because it works with the laws of physics. It works with the natural movement that horses, their body is designed to move. They just have to sometimes figure out how to organize that movement in a comfortable way. And that takes practice. It just takes practice. So it's a matter of let's get out here and just walk and practice for an hour. We're not going to cover 25 miles because they're not going 25 miles an hour, right? They're going maybe 2 to 5 miles an hour. So I go, we're only going to cover 2 to 5 miles in the hour we're spending. But even us, if we're not used to taking long walks, walking for a mile can really make us rethink how we're using our bodies. Because we're going to find it's not just a strength issue, it's the coordination that makes us more efficient, which is your whole shtick.
It's not my whole.
Yes.
So I had some questions coming up in my mind. Is back then when I lunged, I was not mindful. I wasn't really paying attention. Couldn't it also be an opportunistic time to just actually watch your horse, how it moves?
Oh my God, yes. Like,
And not
OMG, yes,
looking or
exclamation
finding,
point.
I look at it from an Alexander teacher point of view is where's the habitualness of it all? Like with humans, I always say to people, well, I had a client yesterday, day before yesterday, and she had an imbalance in the muscle structures in her neck. And I said, well, what I think might be going on is you're constantly turning your head to the left and looking down. And it didn't come to her right then. She went home, and I think it was 3 or 4 hours later, texted me, and she goes, I just figured it out. That's where I put all my notes. She's a graphic design artist. She goes, oh, I always put my notes to the left and down. So she finally figured out, oh my gosh, that's where that habit of the imbalance in the muscle structure in my neck is coming from.
Yes,
So
interesting.
I'm wondering if we can start looking at our horses, not as faulting them, but just looking at, oh, isn't that interesting? When we go left, this happens, as opposed to when we go right or something like that.
Exactly, because changing direction for the horse, just like us, we're all right-handed or left-handed. And so when we change direction on a lunge line, it's actually more challenging to the balance than changing speed. People think changing speed is harder from halt to walk to trot to canter. I go, changing direction is much harder when it comes to balance than changing speed. So, like, I tend to leave people get worried that a horse is on one direction for too long. I go, if I have an hour work session, I'm going to do 30 minutes one way and then 30 minutes the other way. I'm not going to constantly change direction because it takes a while on one direction to work through whatever habits there are and start to change them. And some horses that are really having a hard time, I'll do an hour on one direction on the lunge line, and then the next session, I'll do an hour on the opposite direction. And, years ago, first working with mentors who were teaching me about horse movement, horses are masterful at masking any deviation of normal movement because that would attract the eye of a predator. So I remember my mentors trying to point something out to me about the horse's movement. And I was like, I cannot see what you're talking about. Like, How do you see that? That is a mystery to me that your eyes can see something that my eyes can't see. Right. And then after spending thousands of hours in the middle of a lunging circle or a long range circle with nothing better to do than observe the horse,
Then we out.
I go, that development of seeing the movement just happened. I couldn't tell you when it happened, just different challenges to the horse's movement, different muscles, sort of learning to see the skeleton almost with X-ray vision through the skin and the muscle. All of that developed really slowly by just standing there and observing, not being the doer, because as soon as we're driving the horse with the whip or constantly leading the direction with the lunge line or telling them they're too slow, too fast, too close, too far, whatever, every aid we're giving, we're talking, we're not listening. Right. And
And
so,
that's another great point, and I think you taught me this. Just that contact, the listening, is like rein contact. Why can't we apply that same thought when we're lunging, that this is a rein contact and that we should be listening to the information that's coming down the lunge line?
yeah. And I try to point that out with every exercise I do on the ground. It's always, whether it's a halter and a lead rope, a halter and a lunge line, a bridle and a lunge line, or long reins, whatever is attached to the horse's head and the thing from the head to our hand is always simulating the bridle and the reins for riding. Right. But how often are we constantly dragging our horse forward? Like a lot of people who have, horses that don't love forward, they're pulling the horse around the lunging circle. And I go,
Or in
you,
front of them. They're in
or,
front of them. Is that what you mean?
yeah,
They're like
leading
in
or
front of
pulling.
the shoulder. And yeah, I've
Yeah.
seen that.
And we get away with that on the ground, but then the horse doesn't understand. When we're in the saddle, we don't lead the horse forward from the reins. We use a leg,
Good point.
right? And so, how can we expect the horse to sort of extrapolate that, oh, we can lead from the ground, but we push from the saddle? And that's in
You know,
sorting
and
through a lot of groundwork techniques I
yes.
use, I went, if we're not simulating from the horse's point of view, what it feels like to be ridden, then why are we surprised when we have a different horse under saddle than what we had on the ground?
Right.
We're not simulating the conversation through our aids like we would from the saddle. So anything attached to the horse's head with a rope to our hand on the ground is the bridle and one rein. And then the whip is always our legs. So when we activate the whip and use it to push the horse forward, that's our leg aid. When we point the tip of the whip down and we rest it in neutral, that's our leg contact.
Just had that thought
What?
of the constant driver.
It's leg, 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 leg,
Leg,
leg,
leg,
leg,
leg, leg,
leg,
leg,
leg,
leg.
leg, leg, which people do under saddle as much as they do
I
lunging. And also, if you're teaching the horse, I give leg, 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 leg on the lunge line, then why wouldn't the horse expect that under saddle? You've already taught
Interesting.
them that's how we do it.
That it, there has to be constant asking or movement, whatever you want to call it,
Or they stop.
or they stop.
And it's
And then,
frustrating as a rider because your horse can't go forward. There's not much you can shape in the movement if the horse's forward motion is not self-propelled, then it has to be propelled by you, which is one more job on your laundry list of things to manage. Right? That
right.
really should be the horse's job. Because if we ultimately want to get to, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow of every rider is called self-carriage. And I go, so, okay, if the horse is not self-propelled, and self-controlled, then how would we ever find self-courage? Because it's a blend of those two qualities.
Right.
So we're
And
either
I
teaching.
think, yeah, allowing the horse those moments of finding that is so important, allowing the downward transition instead of you've got to, trot for 15 minutes or whatever.
Oh my God. Or even in natural horsemanship, the premise of doing circles, which they never called lunging,
Oh, okay.
was there was a restriction, never do more than four. And I'm like, oh, so the horse is supposed to learn everything they need to know in four laps. Okay. That's a bit of a high demand. And two, the first job the horse has to learn is maintain gait, maintain direction. And I go, well, okay. So you've got maintain gait, maintain direction until they give you four laps. And what I realized was they will do that if we make the corrections. But what you're going to get is maintenance of crappy movement, right? You'll get a trot, but it won't be a good trot. You'll get a canter, but again, by placing the idea that maintain gait and maintain direction is a higher priority than feeling safe and comfortable in any gait. Those are kind of two different goals, right? Are we looking for obedience, which is maintain gait, maintain direction? We don't care if you feel safe or comfortable. Your job is to be obedient and submissive. That's the message the horse is getting, right? Where the way I do it now is my job is the upward transition. As soon as that transition is made, my whip rests. My leg aid is over. My job is done. And it doesn't matter to me if the horse maintains 2 strides of trot or 20 minutes of trot. I go, that's up to you, right? And then once the horse breaks gait, chooses the downward transition. I always leave the downward transition is the horse's choice. The upward transition is my choice. I can request the upward, but the horse has to choose the downward. And the reason I do it that way, especially whether it's halt to walk or walk to trot or trot to canter, the very reason I do it that way is because the easiest thing for a horse to do if they feel unstable or uncomfortable in forward motion is make a downward transition. That's
And
what they
what
do in the pasture.
exactly what I the message I'd really like to get across to people is that's the horse to me, correct me if I'm wrong, actually saying I'm not in balance, I need to
Slow down and
slow
regroup.
down because I'm not in balance. I need to figure out something else than what I'm do
Bingo.
than what we're doing. So yeah, that it the downward transition is to me is by the horse is I'm trying to find self-carriage.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or I'm trying to find comfort. Horses
Yeah.
think, am I safe? Am I comfortable? And I go, if we meet those two essential needs of
Right.
our horse has to feel safe. Really, to do anything with us and us be safe. And our horse has to feel comfortable, which is really the entire reason I've spent 20 plus years learning about horse mechanics and movement, because better mechanical coordination is what ultimately makes for comfortable and efficient motion, no
Right.
matter where we start.
Yeah, same with
And
people.
on the lunge line, it's an opportunity to let the horse figure out what they can for themselves. It's not the lunge line to me is not a supported exercise. It's an unsupported exercise, which
So say that.
means,
What do you mean by that?
so in supported work, I'm going to give aids more frequently and sort of resist the errors quicker. When I'm doing unsupported work, like working free lunging or liberty work, regular lunging with one line, even some versions of hand walking. Those are times where I want my horse to explore their own movement, to make their own decisions, to arrive at something more comfortable through the process of self-discovery. So my aids or my influence has to be minimal if I want that to happen.
Right.
And I have to do it in the context of lunging because, like I said, when we provide food and water, the horse is not going to walk for 2 consistent miles ever, no matter how big the pasture is. They're just not going to sustain movement for that
Right.
long when we provide food and water. And so the lunging to me is a time where I go, okay, we're going to start putting some miles on our movement. We're going to play with trot and canter, but the most important thing is, like at the walk, is where we help them become calmer and think their way through their body use. When we go to trot, if the horse wants to trot or wants to canter, it's usually out of anxiety. So I can say, okay, I'm not going to ask for trot or canter, but I'm also not going to slow you down. And I think the longest a horse has ever gone using that strategy was almost an hour, but it had been
Wow.
trained. It was a Pasifino that had been punished for stopping.
Oh,
And it took
bummer.
almost an hour for that horse to even try to
To
walk.
come down.
Most horses, it feels like an hour. And if you look at your watch, it's usually 10 minutes. It just feels like an hour while they're sort of flying around the end of the lunge line. So a horse like you had, I go, I wouldn't stop that horse from trotting or cantering, but I wouldn't even have to lift the whip. I go, I'm
No.
just the anchor in the middle,
Right.
waiting for that kind of horse to choose the walk. And in that process, they're releasing anxiety. They're starting, I'm not adding to the fear. I'm not contributing to the problem that's coming out from the inside of them, but I'm there long enough that they can work through it. They can run away in a circle as long as they want. And usually within 10 or 15 minutes, they start going, well, I don't know what I'm afraid of anymore. I'm actually fine. Could I walk? And as soon as they walk, I do nothing. I make no correction. If they halt, then really slowly, I ask them to walk again using my energy and the whip. But I don't want to contribute to the running.
Right, you don't want to keep escalating. You want to let them come down
Yeah, I want to let
gently.
them come down. I want to
Yeah.
reward that reduction of anxiety. And then once they're walking, I go, now is when the work begins.
Right.
Right? Now is when they're going to start seeking comfort. And the same
Yeah.
on the opposite. You know, you flip a coin, they're either going to run away or not go forward. It's the same problem.
Yes.
I go, heads, they run away, tails, they don't want to go forward. Every horse will explore both of those
Right.
strategies, right? That's why I can't say there's this kind of horsenality or that kind of horsenality. I go, they're living, thinking creatures. They're going to try everything
Right.
depending on the situation. So my fast horse will suddenly become the horse that doesn't want to go forward. And before the slow horse finds efficiency, it's not unusual at all that after X number of corrections from halt to walk, they get pissed and they suddenly take off.
Yep.
And I go, okay, now I see that change of strategy. We're getting somewhere. And somewhere between too fast and not wanting to go forward is where the horse discovers. I don't make them do it. They discover self-propelled, self-controlled, rhythmic walk that starts to look calm and efficient.
Yeah.
Then, once I have that for like a consecutive 5 to 10 minutes, Then when I play with trot and canter, I'm not going to have a horse that's either blowing up or running away. They're going to think their way through transitions. I push them up to trot, they trot a little, and when they feel unstable or uncomfortable, they're going to transition back to walk. And for a long time, I used to call it playing the scales because everybody thinks they know how to lunge a horse, but there's a million ways to lunge a horse. So I sort of avoided that term for a long time. I go, now I embrace it, but I just have to explain it. But playing the scales is really, if I'm just asking my horse to discover more comfortable motion, which is always going to mean enhanced coordination, then it's just like when we're learning the piano. We don't start by playing a song, we start by learning where our fingers go. And we play the scales to develop the muscle memory through our fingers of how to play the piano. And the same with typing. I don't know if typing class still exists, but
I know,
it's
right?
like, I think
That's
that's the one
right.
class in high school that paid off the most was my typing class. But learning the finger placement and sort of disciplining your fingers to type efficiently, right? That's what makes you eventually type faster and faster. But if you just peck with your fingers, right? Or like with cell phones, I watched all the young people do all of their texting with two thumbs,
Yeah.
and old people were like one finger in it around the keyboard. And so I discipline myself to learn to text with my thumbs because I go, ultimately, I'll be faster. And now it's easy.
Right. The
Right. But that,
memory's there.
yeah. And so that's what lunging is to me with for the horse is we visit, we should be able to maintain a walk. That's the up to 25 miles a day is natural for horses. Right. That would take
With
at
a
5
nice
miles an
calm
hour, that's going to
horse.
be a 5 hour lunging session. We're not going to do a 5 hour lunging session, right? But at the walk, that wouldn't hurt our horse, right? So we're getting our horse to think, oh, if I keep halting, it's just more energy. Or if I keep running, I'm spending too much energy. So a calm, rhythmic walk is going to feel the most comfortable. So they're going to discover that. Then when we're working on an efficient trot or canter, we ask them, can you transition into that gait? And as soon as they feel unstable or uncomfortable or excited, they're allowed to come back to walk whenever they choose. And if the excitement level is high, I might let them walk a few laps before I ask for my next trot transition. And if they only gave me 2 strides of trot, then after 1 stride of walk, I can repeat the trot transition. Right? But I have to be disciplined not to keep the whip up during trot, right? Or
I think
I'm the
that's what I
one.
see. Yeah,
Leg,
I
leg,
see
leg, leg, leg.
what do I want to call it? The escalation of energy from the human. I don't know if it's anger or frustration or what, but that driving force is so predatorial.
No, and if I could do a little cartoon thought bubble over the horse, it would be like, why should I maintain the trot? You're doing all the work for me. Just keep going. You're doing fine, human. Just keep pushing harder. You're doing great. Work a little harder, and I might give you a tad more energy.
Little energy.
Yeah. And horses are very clever, like and they're efficient. So I go, if they figure out that they can get us to spend more energy, they'll do it. I go, why not? Right? And so you see that escalation of energy, that frustration or more, 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 more coming from the human. And I go, in the horse's mind, it's kind of like, hey. Watch me work my human. Yeah.
Exactly.
So it does take some discipline. And I think the other thing too is we want to see our horse choose a walk, a trot, or a canter that would win in the show ring. And I go, that's not always the first walk, trot, or canter that we're going to get. That
That's true.
develops over time as the horse learns better coordination internally. So I go, you can't make your horse have a competitive looking, show winning walk, trot, or canter through manipulation. I go, that we can get the horse to explore. That's the purpose of the upward transitions. We can get the horse to be calmer. That's the purpose of the downward transitions or the time at the walk. But we can't make them change their coordination, especially on a lunge line.
Yeah, I'd
And
agree.
so if we see a walk that's self-propelled, but it's kind of a crappy walk, as long as they're walking, we can't be too picky about what it looks like at first. And if we're picky, what we're going to end up doing is taking over the job of forward. We're going to start doing
Right.
leg, 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 leg. And as soon as we do that, the horse is no longer self-propelled. So we're never going to improve the walk as long as we're the one constantly pushing for the walk or the trot or the canter. And a horse like you're describing, your thoroughbred, we think once they get into canter, they need to keep cantering until they calm down.
Right.
But ironically, the longer they canter, sometimes it becomes a game of momentum. They can only find their stability by going faster and faster and faster.
The speed theory.
Yeah.
There's a whole theory on that.
Well, yeah, it's like little kids running down a hill. They don't slow down, they
Right.
speed up.
Right.
Right? Because if we sort of go into the speed, momentum can give us a sense of stability. It's really out of control, but it does stabilize the body. And so some horses choose that. They're the ones that never slow down.
Right.
So I go, once I ask for the canter, my job is over. If that horse takes 10 minutes at canter to come all the way back through trot, all the way back to walk, it's the time in the walk that takes the pressure and the excitement out of the canter.
Right.
It's not time in the canter. So upward transitions are always going to escalate energy.
Right.
And time in speed is going to escalate energy, where downward transitions are going to reinforce calmness or allow the body to restabilize, rebalance, and try it again. So if I'm looking at developing a consistent rhythm, either my horse has too much energy or not enough energy.
Right.
So if I have the problem of not enough energy, I can do transitions to trot and canter more frequently. If my horse has too much energy, I don't get to ask for trot or canter as often. I need more time at the walk.
Right.
Because if I don't balance that energy, the horse isn't going to discover how to be both self-propelled and self-controlled. It's and they the horses, the same horse always bounces back and forth between too fast and too slow, too much energy, not enough energy. And I go, that's how they find their balance,
Right.
is they explore too fast, too slow, too many halts, too many runaways, too many like turning into you or turning away from you or changes. All of that, I just go, inefficient. I don't have to worry about it. It's just inefficient. So they haven't
Right.
found it yet.
It's not a personality problem, or they're
Not a
not out to get you.
behavior.
It's not a behavior.
And my favorite, it's not disrespect. I hate that. Hate it, hate it, hate it. I go, the horses, I go, in the horse's mind, you're either part of the herd or you're a predator. There's nothing in between. And so they're not disrespecting you. They're trying to communicate. when they do,
Right.
when horses do something we don't want, they don't know we don't want it. And if we punish them for it, they quit communicating with us.
Right.
If we want to keep that communication open, we can say, yeah, let's not do that. Let's do this. But it's not a punishment. It's just a correction with calm energy. And we have to let the horse, we didn't learn how to ride a horse in one day. We made a
Right.
million mistakes. And the horses were patient with us.
Yes.
And so we have to be just as patient with our horse when we're developing balance through the gates using the lunging technique. That's just an exercise that I think it's as old as riding horses.
Probably.
So I've been blathering on because this is what I've been writing about all morning.
You
I
got it all
got
out. Well, at
it all
least
out.
you got it recorded.
I got to think it through. But
That's
I
cool.
think when I say lunging, it's kind of like the word collection. Like there are, when I use those two words, everybody thinks they know what I'm talking about. And everybody has a completely different picture in their head. If I say we're going to work on collection, that could mean a million different things to a million different people.
Right.
And when I say we're going to lunge the horse, that also can mean a million different things to a million different people. And everybody thinks they know what that means. So I go, here's the way I do it for these reasons. Right? And if you're
Yep.
using lunging like you did, your reason was to get my horse tired enough that I don't get bucked off. Okay, that's your reason. How's that working for you?
It didn't.
It took longer and longer, right? Or if my reason is to help my horse finally desire to go forward or finally move fast enough to look energetic, if that's your reason, then okay, give it a month. How's that working for you? Is it gaining the understanding from your horse that you intended? Is it gaining
Good
the
point.
result that you intended? And I go, if it's not, then there's a million different ways that we can work with a lunge line and a horse and a lunge whip to help our horse learn what we actually want them to learn. And that to me is the purpose of lunging. And if nothing else, it simulates what they would do in nature in long periods of movement without feeling afraid to just learn how to use their own bodies more comfortably. And even if we set up one of those, what is it, a grazing maze or what are
Oh, the
those
track
things?
system.
The track system, or we
Track
have,
system.
I go, oh, my horse has plenty of room to move. It's not about that. If they're not having to go out and forage for food and seek water because they're thirsty and they don't know where it is. If they're not motivated to find food and water, they won't move no matter how much space you give them or how many herd buddies you give them. They're never going to move the same way they do in nature, seeking food and water. And that's just part
Right.
of our domestic environment, is we provide that. Usually at a known place in a known time.
That's true.
Yeah. So they go over and get a drink when they're thirsty. And then they're done. They're either eating or sleeping, but they're definitely not out there going, okay, I got to get my steps in today.
I know, right?
I
Wear your watch. That's pretty funny.
Oh,
Okay.
but that's another way to look at lunging is we're sort of the smartwatch or the Fitbit going, okay, time to get our steps in today. And our horse is like, do we have to? And we go, yeah,
Really?
we do. We need to get our steps in today. I think that's a good place to wrap it up. How
I do
about you?
too.
All
Yep.
righty. Thank you to all the new subscribers on YouTube. I think we had like a
Yay.
record increase this month. We're still very small by YouTube standards, but I have to thank you guys. I am so thrilled that there's more of us out there who care about really learning about our horses on a deep level, and that you guys have the patience to listen to Deb and I, blah, 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 once a week on the podcast. So thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it. It's really encouraging when people like or share or subscribe, or when I see the podcast numbers go up, it encourages us to keep going. So thank you. And we look forward to seeing you on the next episode.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.